Blog Talk Radio.
Real sports guy. People's Radio. It's all that GM in your headphones. Allow me to introduce
the illustrious Queen Anne Poop. Marcus the Game Changer. The Seventh Jackson. D. Will. The Ill Executive. He's like Suge Knight without the anger management issues. Phil T, the sports PhD. This dude is coming at you from all angles. He's got all the bases covered. There's not a whole lot about sports this brother don't know.
Can you dig it, sucker?
Featuring Ray, Justin Page, Eric Hampton.
RNC fam is like, woo.
Now, I blame it on Nintendo.
It's definitely a gin party around here. Definitely a gin party.
Don't bring any Kool-Aid.
It don't get no better than this, baby.
I want winners. You guys act like it. Pick it up a little bit. Okay? Get your chin up. Smile. Smile. Anybody can be peachy.
Don't get no more realer.
All right. Welcome to the Real Sports Guys with Real Guys Talk Real Sports. RSG, Renegade Radio, back in the house once again, the official RSG podcast. It's Marcus the Game Changer, 130, the illustrious three-man booth here to hold you down for the next 90 minutes. We're going to make sure it's the funkiest 90 minutes of your week. Now, before I have y'all wondering how long is this brother going to spend on the intro, let me bring in my compadre. All right, my comrades, my man, D. Wills, holla at the people.
Man, I just found out this is the 10th anniversary of the Malice in the Palace. You know, I'm from Southeastern Michigan, and I'm thinking, that was Detroit on display. Like, you can come in, fans leave in Detroit in full participation. Like, they believe the Bad Boy stuff went beyond the strike, the line. You know, Bad Boy was, once you walk in the building, everybody was part of the mission. But just to think that's been 10 years ago, it seemed like it was yesterday. And we're all talking about it and where we are right now. But the Malice in the Palace.
Wow. Here's the real question. Do you remember what you were doing when, because I was watching that game live, not in the arena, but live on TV. I was watching that game. And it was such a surreal moment. Do either of you remember what you were doing when that fight broke out?
I was watching it. And I remember just being embarrassed, like, this is not going to end well. And then when Ron Artest fired on one of those fans that was on the court, you know the feeling you get when you're a kid and you see one of your friends giving a speech or, you know, doing something, it's almost like you're a little embarrassed for them. That's why I was with Ron. I was like, this is not going to end well.
Yeah, man. I just remember watching it and, like, hoping and thinking, like, okay, this can't get any worse. And then it would get worse. Like, more people would get involved. You're like, okay, they're going to get this under control at any moment. And then it's like, nope,
they're not going to get this under control at all. You know, like, dude threw the cup, and you saw Artest go up in the stands, and I was like, okay, somebody grab him, let's get this under control. And then Steven Jackson comes out of nowhere throwing punches like a character in Double Dragon. The old video game, you know what I'm saying? Like, he has flames coming out of his fist.
The best line from Steven Jackson, he tells a story when they go back in the locker room, and Artest goes, are we going to get in trouble for this?
He got 86 games.
And Steven Jackson realized he cost himself millions of dollars for this fool. He rolled for his boy. That's one thing I love about Jackson is he rolled.
Yeah.
He didn't care. He rolled hard.
Yeah.
You know,
this is true.
You know, these are two teams that rolled hard. That was how they were built. Today they would know what to do with those kind of teams. But interesting.
Yeah, man, that was a run. Honestly, there was a run of moments where, I don't know, from just my young adulthood, where I the whole Super Bowl Janet Jackson deal, I watched that live and I was wondering, like, what just happened? And the Malice in the Palace was another one of those moments where it's just like, what just happened? You know, so, yeah, man, that's 10 years ago. Wow. But anyway, my man 100 grand, let me bring him in. Phil T. Sports PhD, what's happening, Captain?
Doing good. In the intro, we talk about straight cash, homie. And since our last show, I watched the 30 for 30. D-Wheels always talks about 30 for 30 moments. I watched Randy Moss's 30 for 30, Rand University.
Oh,
and
classic.
It was one that, I mean, honestly, these 30 for 30s have been on point for, you know, 10 years now. You know, this season has been excellent, but the Randy Moss one, it showed me a whole different side of Randy Moss, and it helped me understand Randy Moss a lot better. And it just took me back to a space, you know, when Randy was doing his thing, I was in high school and I was in college, I think, when he was a rookie. I believe I was in college. And it just reminded me how dominant this guy was. You know, my brother and my uncles, 10, 15 years older than me, they talk about Jerry Rice with a certain reverence. I think we can do the same with Randy Moss.
And I can't argue with you on that, man. I think, you know, and I think that's the beauty of the 30 for 30s. ESPN gets a lot of flack for a lot of stuff that they don't do well and a lot of things that they cover that just don't make sense. The 30 for 30s are quality, man. I mean, I haven't seen one. And it's something that I'm just not in, just not my thing, or I'm not interested in.
Yeah.
But they have been captivating, even if it's not something that I'm necessarily locked into. It's still done very well, very interesting. And you always learn something, man. But, yeah, Randy, man, that dude was bad. I mean, that dude was bad.
And
he's one of those guys.
Yeah, and I didn't really know the whole story about Notre Dame. For those that didn't watch it, he initially committed to Notre Dame, but he never went to Notre Dame because they pulled his scholarship. He got in trouble his senior year in high school. And then Florida State, I mean, this is when Notre Dame was Notre Dame. And then Florida State took him, and he ended up going to Florida State. He got redshirted. According to Bowden, he says that the president said that I had to redshirt him before I could put him on the field. But then the summer between his redshirt year, freshman redshirt, and then his true sophomore year, he got in trouble, so he never played for them. And it was just interesting, man, to just see the role that he took. And he made a lot of boneheaded decisions. There's no excusing to that, but I think a lot of young men go through that, but a lot of them don't emerge like Randy did. And it may be because they didn't have Randy's talent, but you know, I think there was a certain level of stick-to-itiveness that he had there.
Yeah, and you have to have a certain level of tenacity to be able to overcome any of that, you know what I mean? But yeah, I remember reading, you know, I was an avid Street and Smith reader back in the day. I remember reading old Street and Smith and tracking where he was going because I knew he was a big-time recruit. And I remember when he was at Notre Dame, and then he kind of vanished. And then he showed up at Florida State on their roster, and I was like, okay, this kid Moss is at Florida State. Then he disappeared. Then, like, 2 years later, he's catching, like, 50 touchdowns at Marshall. I'm like, oh, that's where he went. And that was when him and Chad Pennington were killing out at Marshall.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, man, great stories. I think the beauty of it is that it's captured. You know what I mean? Like, the story is captured. Like, I wish we could have 30 for 30s on guys like, you know, Chocolate Thunder or Wilt Chamberlain when they were actually doing it. You know what I mean? When they were actually playing and have some of that knowledge about those guys, you know what I mean? Iceman Gervin, you know, cats like that from back in the day and kind of be able to capture some of those moments while they were still in the moment, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So 30 for 30s are great. I love them. So we did spend quite a bit of time on the intro. We're going to go ahead and get into the proceedings this evening as we always do about this time. This is the intro to let them know. You listen to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG Renegade Radio, brought to you by Resistance Digital Solutions, XL Academics, On the Rocks in Rockford, Illinois, and Frederick County. All hosts and guests appear via the Frederick County Gateway. Frederick County is the official accountant of RSG. Hit them up, get all your accounting needs taken care of, and let them know that the Real Sports Guys sent you. So first off, we're going to hit y'all off with some NFL talk. We're going to break down this whole Adrian Peterson suspension. We're going to talk about the career arc of RG3. I mean, how do you go from super hot to polar vortex cold in such a short period of time? We're going to dig into that. We're going to hit you off with the dog of the week, talk about the college playoffs picture, give you some scenarios of teams that could play spoiler, teams that might sneak in and bust up the party. So it's going to be some NBA talk, obviously. This week when we talk NBA, we're going to get into our top five players in the league right today and talk about some specific guys, in particular, Steph Curry, Anthony Davis, Kobe, Melo, D-Wade, Kevin Love, et cetera, and where they fit. Where they fit right now into that hierarchy of NBA players, you know, we'll see if those guys make our top fives. And then D-Will is going to hit you with the XL Academics last word for this week. So we got a slamming show for you all. We're going to go ahead and jump into it with this NFL talk. Adrian Peterson, please no contest, gets everything handled in court, seems like he's on a path to being reinstated back into the league, had a meeting with Goodell and his people down at the NFL offices that he did not show up to. Now, the reason he did not show up to this meeting was because the NFLPA told him that this wasn't a part of the collective bargaining agreement, and he didn't have to necessarily show up. So he didn't show up. He has wound up being suspended, what looks like possibly for the remainder of the season. There's still some loose ends to be tied up, some T's to be crossed, and some I's to be dotted around this whole situation. Immediately after the NFL Players Association was going to appeal. Again, there has been some controversy around whether an appeal will be allowed. So there's a lot of murkiness and a lot of uncertainty flirting around with this Adrian Peterson situation. What are your thoughts, fellas? I want to start with you, PhD. Just give me your thoughts on this whole situation. Do you think it's fair that he's been suspended by the NFL?
I don't. I believe that the habitual line stepper, Roger Goodell, has stepped over a line again. Adrian Peterson also made some serious mistakes in the aftermath of the situation. I won't even get into the actual situation, but when I say aftermath, I mean you know, some of the texts that became public between him and the mother of the child, you know, smoking marijuana and, you know, coming up dirty on a urine test, not showing. I feel like he did not hire a PR firm. He didn't hire a PR firm, a public relations firm to handle this. It was something where maybe his lawyer was advising him or he wasn't accepting the advice or whatever it was, but there was a perception issue that bit him in the butt. Now, from the league standpoint, I believe they overstepped. He set out, I don't know how many games it was, 8 games or so. He was getting paid, and now he's being told that he can't come back until possibly next season. And just in the letter, some of the things that we're mentioning in terms of him not showing enough remorse, him not, you know, really understanding the magnitude of this, a concern about his other children. I feel like the NFL is doing these things for public relations purposes, and it's just not their place. It is not their place. I think it's fine to hold him accountable. I think the original suspension was fine. But to carry this on, you know, I think it's unfortunate. And I believe that the events that happened with Ray Rice are certainly coloring the trepidation that the league is taking with this because they messed up. I mean, admittedly, they messed up with Ray Rice in terms of handling his suspension. So I think it's one of those situations where I remember growing up, you know, my brother did something really, really bad, you know, in terms of his school or getting in trouble at school or something like that. When I came along 8, 9 years later, my parents was already on that. And so it just, you know, like they were already, like I was not going to be able to do that. And I think this is what's happening to Adrian Peterson. Peterson is, his whole penalty and just the approach that they're taking in terms of taking things very slowly, being, I think, over-aggressive with a penalty is a direct reflection of how they messed up with Ray Rice.
And I love that analogy that you gave of when, you know, you're the sibling whose other sibling messed up, and then you do something similar, slightly similar, and you get the book thrown at you because your parents are just fed up. You know, they just fed up. You know, it's like in my house, you know, my kids, maybe they're asking a question over and over and over. You know, like, the next person asks me that question, it's going in the room for the rest of the night. All right? I'm not going to answer this question again. And then somebody asks you the question. Now, they didn't know. They may not have heard you give that ultimatum or give that particular command. And so then they answer the question. Well, now you got to stick to it. You know, you've been in a situation where you've thrown it out there that you're going to be harsh on this kind of stuff. And how well you have to hold yourself to that, you know. And the NFL is in that position where now they have to drop the hammer on these situations. And I think you're right. When you talk about if this happened in 2013, I don't know if he's suspended for an entire year. I don't know if he misses any time. But I think because it happened after the Ray Rice situation and all of the missteps with that situation, I think the NFL has taken a hard stance. D. Wills, what's your perspective on this situation?
So, I mean, I always want to start this conversation that I think everybody who has talked about this accepts the fact that we're talking about a 4-year-old. So I think we put that in context. I think sometimes we have this conversation, I think I love where Phil's comments were directed, but it goes with saying that as we have this debate, we all realize, you know, it was a 4-year-old, and so we have that context. So I want to make sure people, because I want to hear some of these conversations happen nationally when folks criticize one side or the other, people are assuming that people are not valuing what happened to this little boy. And so, you know, we've got to a point where we have the inability to compartmentalize certain aspects of a discussion. So I want to start with that. So there's a couple of different things that I want to look at. There's one that's more of a personal issue, and that's more AP. I think he needs to take time away because he needs to take time away. Regardless of suspensions, all these other things, I think there's some things that are coming up that is just about him. And I think sometimes in life, and this is, you know, part of how student athletes develop in their identity and some things that grow on that, there are some pieces where you just have to put some stuff on the back burner. I think Chris Carter was if you had a chance to hear him talk about this, has been very eloquent about, you know, the things that AP needs to do regardless of all this other stuff. And so I think this time away, regardless of how it happened, I think it should be good for him as an individual. On the other side, you know, I think this is the result of fool's gold. It's about money over principle. Only people who have to blame themselves are the players. When they went for the money, they went for the time away, they gave up the leverage around other aspects and control over their destiny. And at some point, you know, players' associations, athletes have got to think about when they're negotiating, there's some things that are just more important than making sure you get your fair share of the money. You have to think about things that create leverage for other opportunities, you know, because every time you get suspended, you lose the money. And so when you give up this power around what happens when these incidents happen, then, you know, then you can't complain about that. You lost that battle at the bargaining table. So, you know, all organizations have different ways in which they handle these things. And when you talk about the NFL, the NBA, Major League Baseball, every decision they're going to make is about brand. It's going to be about money because these are billion-dollar industries, point blank. And so they're making the decision we all knew they were going to make because at the end of the day, it's about money. Are they hypocritical? Yes. But that's what billionaires are. They're hypocritical. They push around anything that takes away from the brand and the ability to continue to make money at that level, they're going to go after. And it's not going to be consistent. They're just going to knock it off as it comes. And so the players gave that up because they were trying to go after the money. They're trying to go after the time. And I, you know, as I was watching the bargain, I'm like, why aren't they ever they putting leverage on this? They spent all this time complaining about Goodell, but then when it came to the bargaining table, they never pushed it. They just kind of let it go. And now it's coming home to roost. And so, you know, they got to think about when they go back to this table, it's more than just about the money. You know, power is about decision-making in all aspects of what's happening with athletes. And if they don't bargain that way, then they're going to continue to run into these kind of decisions.
Well said, well said. I want to shift gears as we talk about the NFL, and I want to talk about RG3. Young Robert Griffin III has had quite the career arc. Came out and just set the world on fire, Willie Beeman style, in Any Given Sunday, his first season. I mean, this dude,
I like it.
This dude just killed the league. Just killed the league. If you don't know what I'm talking about, Willie Beeman, rent the movie Any Given Sunday. Fun movie, good
Beeman,
sports movie.
Really?
Check it out. Exactly. That's what I'm talking about. So this guy comes in rookie year, off of a Heisman campaign to Baylor, sets the league on fire, gets the Washington Redskins to the NFL playoffs, and then tears up his knee. Goes on a campaign. All in for week one, rushes himself back, gets back healthy, gets back on the field and is not quite himself, hurts himself again. Now he's in his third year. He has been healthy for the most part. No, you know, season-ending injuries. He did break a bone in his foot. The bone healed. He's back playing. During this whole situation, there's been a clamoring for the backup. Everybody loves the backup until the backup becomes a starter. Then you want the starter back, and you realize why the backup was the backup. But it seems with RG3, he's turned off his teammates in his locker room. They're accusing him of being more of a brand builder than a skill builder. He's not focused on the right things. He's more into marketing himself to the point where they start calling him RG Me. And now it's almost at a point where his rookie deal is going to be up. The Redskins have a really – really important decision to make this offseason. Do they keep him around as their franchise quarterback, or do they move on and go in a different direction? They are currently struggling. They're at the bottom of their division in the NFC East with a record of they have one win. They're 3-7 right now. So they played 10 games. They've only won 3. It's not looking good for the Washington Football Club. And RG3 no longer seems to be cemented and chiseled in stone as a fixture in that franchise anymore. He had a recent press conference where he, in so many words, threw his team under the bus. Comments of, you know, I can't do anything if the other 11 or the other 10 guys on the field aren't playing well. You know, Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady, you know, they can't perform at the level they perform at if the other guys on the team aren't doing their jobs. Yeah, not great comments. So first off, I want to get your opinion on the comments and just where you're at as a sports fan with OG Wills. Kick this conversation off. How do you feel about Robert Griffin III?
Now I'm going to start out by saying this. His first thing out of his mouth is he said, I got to do better. So I'll start with
that.
However, I love Jay Gruden. You know, the problem with today's athletes and y'all hip-hop heads, you know, back in the day you had to prove yourself. You had to come through and you had to battle through. You had to do something. Now today, if you get the right production set up, you're an instant star. And it's not about working to be being great. You know, that kind of that patience. You know, I talked to college students and I said, you know, you're the microwave generation. But there was something about letting the food marinate, letting it cook a little bit. You know, and the parents and the grandparents and the audience, they start smiling because when you make that pie and put love in it and let it grow, it just tastes so good when it come out. And these young cats, and this always irked me about RG3, is he always came out talking like he arrived when he hadn't done anything. And so I love that Jay Gruden came in, and sometimes you just got to get hit over the head with a dose of reality. That's not your place. That's not your place. And so sometimes you just got to be quiet and perform. And that's always irked me about him. And I'm a big supporter of him, but there's something about him that he can't understand that you need to just focus on you and quit trying to be the spokesperson. You know, just be the best person you can be. And you got a lot of that going on. So that was my reaction with it. And if he learns a lesson, I still think he can be a great quarterback. He's smart. You know, all these other people talking all this stuff about this and that, you know, Shanahan did a lot to break his body down. You know, they try to run him like, you know, he was at Oregon in the NFL. You know, they put him in harm's way on the way they were playing. And maybe that's part of they felt like they had to do that. But they weren't really developing him. And I think some of that criticism, and I was criticizing that from the beginning with the way that the Shanahans was, they were coaching him. But he still performed as a rookie and did his thing. But I think part of his issue is he just needs, you know, he don't got the right people around him. And so like hip-hop artists, these cats who get in trouble, you realize they got the right people around them. You know, they got the right people. You know, Heather B. always says this on Wake Up Show. You know, who they got around them when Bieber get in trouble? Like, who around them? You know, that's all
yeah, he does.
Yes,
he does.
What's going on with the people around them? And every time I hear RG3, I'm like, who around him? Like, pull him back. Like, who are your boys? Like, if I act like
right, who's
that,
co-signing this madness?
Yeah. Y'all would call me like, D, you out of – look, man, I'm not going to put you out here on blast, but D, man, you out of order. Y'all would say that to me.
Yeah.
Because that's how we roll like that. You know, y'all would get
right.
a call. You know, the phone number come up. I'm like, oh, I done messed up. It's Phil T. Oh, here go Marcus. You know, I'm thinking – they're going to say, you're out of order. I saw that press conference, and you need to tone it down, man. But they ain't got nobody around him like that. And a lot of these cats don't have folks like that around them. And I'm like, whatever happened to the real dude in your clique? Like, whatever else is saying, he don't want to pull you back from, like, you need to get rid of some of these fools and get it right. If you don't, I'm going to beat you up in this closet. You know, because that's just how we grew up. And I don't see that around him.
Yeah, he might have too many Dame Dashes, and he might need a proof. You know what I mean? He might need a proof in his crew, and he's got a Dame Dash who's just like, this is good for business. Let's keep this going. You know, take that. You know what I'm saying? I think he just has burned some bridges. I mean, and Gruden came out and said it. You know, it's not your place. You know, he came out and said that, you know, he said first, you know, he's got to play better. But that's one of those statements. It's like when somebody comes up to you and is like, hey, don't take this personal. and then they say some personal stuff afterwards, right? Like, they just excuse themselves. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you got to tell me not to take it personal, I know you something personal is about to follow. You know what I'm saying? So that's kind of how that was. It's like, okay, I'm gonna throw some shade on myself, but then I'm gonna throw a thunderhead cloud over y'all. You know what I mean? So
and you don't have the numbers that you put yourself in Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, and you can't even talk about Russell Wilson. You ain't even put Andrew Luck, so you can't even get into that conversation. You should know better. You're too smart. This is a kid who could go on. He's thinking about going to law school, so he's smart. To Baylor, this is a smart
right
guy. You're not talking about somebody.
And if you were keeping it real, the conversation would have sounded more like, you know, he still probably would have threw his teammates under the bus. But if he were keeping it 100, he would have been more like, you know, Brian Hoyer, you know, Jake Locker. Guys like that can't perform, you know, without the other 11 guys on the field doing what they need to do, because that's the class that he's in right now. You're talking about Peyton Manning and Aaron Rodgers. Oh, man. PhD, I want to pull you into this conversation. Do you think he still got a place in Washington as a franchise quarterback?
Yeah, if he plays well, if he shows a flash and has a solid, you know, out of these next, what does he have, 5 or 6 games left this season? I think if he plays solid at least half of it, he'll be fine. One of the things that frustrated me with this whole situation is that, would we be upset if Tom Brady had said this? Would we be upset if Aaron Rodgers had said this? I don't think so. I don't think we'd be as upset, and perhaps some would say that they're more established and they've earned the right to say this. That double standard has always eked me up. And, you know, I agree with what you all have said. Sometimes I just want to say, shut up, man. Why are you talking so much? You know, but Gruden kind of overstepped too. Like, I think that was very intentional on Gruden's behalf. It's one of those situations where you kind of know who's in charge. You go to who's in charge, whether that's the GM or the owner, and say, listen, I'm thinking about doing this. You got my back if I do this. I think Gruden got the green light to do this. You know, sometimes I watch I just went through last year, earlier this year, watched all 7 seasons of The West Wing. And there were a few episodes where the president pretty much had given the question to somebody in the press corps, and he was waiting for that question. I feel like Gruden was waiting on the question. And the only thing that was missing was, I'm glad you asked. You know?
Right, right. Absolutely. I'm all in with you on that one. It's definitely one of those scenarios. It's definitely one of those scenarios where, you know, it's like, you know, I've been an assistant coach before. And when you're an assistant, you ask the coach, you know, you might see something that you don't like. And so you run over to the head coach and like, hey, can I go off on them right now? And the head coach gives you that green light and you just go ballistic. Because, you know, the assistant coach is usually, like, good cop. The assistant coach is usually the good cop. Everybody hates the head coach. Everybody loves the assistant coach. And so, you know, you get that green light to just go bonkers on the team for a second, and you just lose it. You know what I mean? Smoke coming out your ears and everything. I think that's what Gruden got from Snyder.
I tell you what, I just didn't understand the move, because they gave up they literally mortgaged their future to get Robert Griffin III. And after his first year, it seemed like the best decision. It did. It made the playoffs. He played, I believe he made the Pro Bowl. If not, he was near Pro Bowl level. And the future was bright. Last year, you know, injuries and so forth, didn't work out for him. But 3 years in, I believe this is their third year, 3 years in, I don't like the decision from a strategic standpoint to take that approach, because, again, this is your future. What do you have? Kirk Cousins, McCoy, somebody in the draft. You know, it's one of those things where you have to look at available options. You know, I study organizational psychology. One of the reasons people leave jobs or you know, they make decisions, am I going to keep putting up with this stuff with my boss or am I going to leave? It's about alternatives, available alternatives in terms of employment. Man, they don't have any strong available alternatives in terms of quarterback. And what are you going to do, go after the next hot thing in the draft? To me, again, Robert Griffin needs to shut up and play. But I don't think you put your quarterback out there on Front Street, man, especially if this is supposed to be the leader of the locker room. Man, he already was struggling in terms of a leadership position and people respecting him in terms of players. What they going to look at him like now? You know, it's one of those things. You know, say if you're a mid-level manager, but the manager above you is always belittling you in front of your troops, it's one of those things that's like, man, this dude ain't worth nothing. I'm just going to go to so-and-so. You know?
Right.
I don't think they're setting him up for success.
I agree. I think it's a situation where, you know.
But I would say Sebastian looked at what the coach drew and like, are you going to do something about this or is he weak? And he's like, I got this. I've been with him all year. And it was at a point where he had to say something because he had vets and they're like, I'm not going to take too many more of these. You know what I'm saying? I'm not going to take too many more of these. And so he knew we had to go off. You know, Deshaun, like, I can take this to the hood. You know, we don't have to. We can do this your way or my way.
Right. It's a real interesting situation. So I gave you guys a challenge of coming up with a career arc for this guy, like a comparable career arc, and I gave you no boundaries. I gave you no parameters. Just said, hey, give me a comparable career arc. You can go anywhere on the board. Did you guys follow through on your homework?
I did.
Okay, what you got, PhD?
Kenny Hardaway.
Okay.
Penny Hardaway.
Okay, break it down.
I know I cross over. I know I cross over sports, but Penny Hardaway, the guy where when he first hit the scene, and keep in mind, NBA careers, you know, I think for every one NFL year, that translates to two or three NBA years, okay? So the first two or three years we were watching Penny Hardaway, Penny was doing some things that you had the old schoolers in the barbershop like, I haven't seen anybody like that since Magic. I haven't seen anybody like that since ever. And Penny was doing some things that he was doing things that a lot of guys were able to do in college but couldn't translate to the NFL or to the NBA. And that's what I saw in RG3, where he brought in this whole different method of playing the quarterback position. And maybe that's too strong because maybe we should credit Cam Newton for bringing that in. But he was able to do it at a level that I thought could be sustained. I thought he was going to be similar to Michael Vick, but a better passer because he got it better quicker. Like, he got it quicker. And then injuries came. And now you can't do what you used to do. Penny Hardaway, he had a strong 3 or 4 years, and he started getting injured. And, yeah, you can be a 6'7", 6'8", point guard, but if you can't blow by people like you were a 6'2", point guard, all of a sudden you're just another wing player. And now we're seeing with RG3 that if he doesn't have the athletic ability because his body's failing or it's a risk-reward thing, like, hey, you can do these exciting things, but we want to have you for 16 games, not 5 games every season, you need to transform your game. And I think that's where we're seeing the struggle. And, you know, that's what happened with Penny Hardaway's career. I mean, Penny Hardaway had a very solid career, but the first couple of years, he looked like he was going to be a guy that would be a top 50 player of all time.
Good comparison. Very good comparison. Very, very good comparison. I like that one. D. Wills, what you got?
My comparison I'm staying in football is Reggie Bush. Reggie Bush came in, you know, electrifying ability. When you look at what he did in his first two seasons going to New Orleans, I see this quote that said, Joe Horn, well, I love Joe Horn. If you're a fantasy person, Joe Horn was an automatic 18 points every week. We used to say, you got to find your Joe Horn. I mean, Joe Horn was 80 yards and a touchdown every week. But anyway, he dubbed him the baby matrix. You know, this guy was, it was like he was going to be the modern day version of Gale Sayers. And, you know, when injuries start to nick him down, his value just went, and then, you know, going to Miami and, you know, even in Detroit. But it was always like, I mean, you know, after you saw what he did his first couple years, I mean, he had some amazing performances in ways that, you know, folks were like, okay, this guy, like, they compared him to Gale Sayers. And so punt returns, can run, get it out of the backfield in that offense in New Orleans. You know, he helped the electric ride and bring it back after Katrina. I mean, he was that guy. I would say Reggie Bush was a Heisman Trophy, you know, winner. Came in, I think, you know, even, you know, following all that stuff that was happening at USC, he still was this kind of electrifying player that folks felt like in the NFL, you could do anything with him.
Okay, another good comparison. I like both of them because you have guys who had just great runs and they built up a level of hype where people were waiting to see that next level, and injuries prevented them from getting to that next level, which I think is consistent with RG3's kind of storyline right now. I went way off the board, fellas.
Mm.
I went way off the board. I went Darryl Jenks. I'm going to see if y'all get that name. Darryl Jenks. Anybody know Darryl Jenks?
No.
Soul Glow from Coming to America. Darryl.
Wow.
Darryl Jenks.
Oh,
right?
Yes,
this is RG3 for me, man. This is RG3. You start off the movie, and this guy is the bomb, right? He's got the Jerry Curl. He's got the girls. And the thing that he has dad in his back pocket, right? He's got the owner in his back pocket the whole time, right? All they need is a Prince Hakeem in D.C., and the whole narrative is going to change, right? They just need a Prince Hakeem for Snyder to fall in love with, you know? Like, baby, he got his own money. That's all they need for Snyder, man. And then he gonna be out in the rain. You know what I'm saying? He gonna be out in the rain, knocking on the window, knocking on the patio door, trying to get with little sis. You know,
wow.
that's how I see. Yeah, that's how I see RG3. Where he's that guy. He's got all the feeling. He's kind of a well-to-do cat who has got the props, but not really the credibility, you know what I'm saying? He doesn't really have a street cred. He doesn't have that. He hasn't paid those dues. And so, you know what I'm saying? He's in good with the pops because he's clean cut. He fits the image. You know, pops are thinking, oh, man, this dude, he could take this family to another level. You know, he could take over my business when we're done. That's RG3. But in the end, you know, there ain't no love there. You know, the locker room ain't in love with this guy. That's the biggest thing about being a quarterback is you got to get people to follow. And if you're a leader and ain't nobody following you, then you ain't a leader. You know, you got to get people to follow. And if guys aren't following him, I think that, to me, that's a death knell of any player that is in a leadership position. If the guys you're with are not, don't believe that you are going to sacrifice for them just as much as you need them to sacrifice for you, if that feeling ain't mutual, it's a hard sell, and it's a hard road to be great. And right now, he doesn't have a team that has his back. You know, there have been quite a few stories coming out of that locker room about the dissension and the lack of a relationship between him and whatever real leadership exists in that locker room, and how I think from what I've heard, it's going to be very difficult for him to be able to pull that leadership mantle away from those guys without playing some phenomenal football, which he just hasn't been able to do. You know, not for, and I won't say for due to a lack of effort, I just don't think he's figured it out. And additionally, I feel like the franchise, as you said, PhD, when they make that level of investment, mortgaging your future, you got to have a better plan than what they had. You can't change coaches after 2 years with a guy. Like, if you're going to put that much into a guy, you have to invest in developing that player and figuring out how to handle that player. You know, they got rid of Shanahan because it seemed like Shanahan didn't want to handle him with the kid gloves. You know, there were stories that RG3 didn't want to look at his own film or any mistakes that he made. You know, he didn't want to look at his cut-ups in the film room, and Shanahan was making them. And, you know, those are situations where, as an owner, if you've invested in that guy and you want to see him grow, you got to step up and be like, hey, let's figure this out, all right? Because you got to get better, and this is about you getting better. And if you can't have that simple conversation with a professional, then, you know, you might be in the wrong business. You might be in the wrong business. So I went way off the board with Daryl Jenks, Soul Glow. You know, that's who I see, you know, when I look at RG3. I see the prim, proper dude with the money and the nice pedigree, but not quite the street cred to really win the love of the young lady in this scenario, the locker room. So I'll leave it there. All good, all very good, on point. Because you guys covered with sports.
So, Marcus, you feel like this RG3 story is not going to end well for RG3?
No, I think it can end well. I don't think he's going to end with the Redskins. I don't think he's going to stay. I don't think he's going to remain a franchise guy. I think they're going to move on. Because, again, quarterbacks get paid a lot of money nowadays. And Andy Dalton just got caked out. I mean, the Bengals just broke the bank for Andy Dalton, and he's marginal. You know, Flacco got mad bread, and he was marginal. You know, I don't know if you can invest in a guy that doesn't have your locker room. You know, I think that's where it becomes, even if he's a decent performer, if he doesn't have the locker room, you know, if he's not the people's champ, then he can't be the champ. You know, you got to start out as the people's champ before you can be the champ. And if he ain't got the people, then he can't get the belt.
Well, let me ask you, rapid fire style. For you and Devon, I'm going to name a quarterback and tell me if you'd rather have this guy or Robert Griffith for the next 5 years. Jay Cutler.
RG3.
That's a tough one, man. Can I punt? I mean, I got to take one of these dudes.
I'll take RG3. I think he can still help him. I think Cutler is who he is. Nick Foles?
And additionally, Nick Foles, I take Nick Foles.
Nick Foles.
Okay. Geno Smith.
RG3.
Teddy Bridgewater. I'll take Teddy.
Ryan Hoyer.
Easy. Johnny Football? I'll take RG3 in that situation.
RG3.
Matt Ryan.
I'm taking Matt Ryan.
Cam Newton.
Cam.
Tony Romo. Kaepernick.
Cap.
Tannehill.
RG3.
Philip Rivers.
Philip Rivers.
I think Rivers. And I'm not a fan. You know, I'm not a fan. It's documented.
Eli Manning.
Ooh. Eli. I take Eli.
I guess. That's what I'm going to
settle. You put the right picture out, Eli, he performed. I'll go Eli.
This is true.
Two more. Alex Smith.
Oh, that's an interesting one.
Alex Smith. I go with Alex Smith.
He's not going to kill you.
Joe Flacco.
That's a tough one.
Flacco.
I go Flacco. Yeah, I go Flacco. That's close, though.
So based on this quick analysis, it sounds like you two agree that Robert Griffith III is somewhere between, if you look at 32 starting quarterbacks, he's somewhere middle of the road, somewhere between 14 to 18. Would you all agree with
right.
that in terms of overall rank?
Yep.
And my middle of the road is not his physical skills. Is his mental toughness puts him in a role. He's too easily swayed. I mean, he's on Twitter arguing with people for things you don't even need to think about. I mean, so he's too easily goaded into things. So my question is his mental toughness. It's not even his physical skills. Like, if he and some of that is, I think he can mature if he decides he's going to do it. I don't think he's Cutler. Well, Cutler is just a personality defect that's not changing. But I don't think
he called it a defect.
It's a defect, man. You look at him. You look at him on
like
the
he was a broken
line,
toy.
Broken.
Like he was a bad PlayStation or something.
Broken.
He called
just,
it a defect.
He just ain't doing it. I mean, come on. It's deep-seated, and it's not leaving him. He just can't let it go. I mean, it's going to take years of deep therapy to get him to smile. And show emotion. For him, it's the right mentorship and his ability to accept mentorship. He's got all the tools. He's got the build. He's smart. He knows what to say, but sometimes you're too smart. You know what I'm saying? Like, so I think he's smart, and sometimes, I mean, this is a guy who could have gone to law school, so sometimes he think he can outthink the room because he's so smart. I think that's part of his problem. This kid went to Baylor,
yeah.
could have gone to law school. That's part of his problem is that he's trying to manage two of it just rather than just play. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes you can overthink the,
yeah.
outthink the room. He outthinks the room.
And in that particular exercise, PhD, in that particular exercise, I think if I was judging off of if I'm the Washington Redskins. You know what I mean? And so I think that's the thing that Washington has to weigh. We continue to try and can we dig ourselves out of this hole? Like, if it's ground zero and you're talking about a franchise that he hasn't been a part of, I think he's still one of the most talented guys and quarterbacks out there. But I think when you're talking about you have a locker room that hasn't bought into him, and how many guys you got to clean out before he gets a clean slate? You feel me? If you make him your franchise guy. If you make him the franchise guy, how many other guys do you have to move so that he can be that? Because you got this contingent of guys who are just not going to buy in to what he's selling because they were there and they've been there. And the amount of turmoil his presence may or may not cause in the locker room is not being balanced by – it's like the T.O. thing. You know, when T.O. was doing his T.O. thing and splitting the locker room, T.O. was also busting DB's heads. You know, and once you stop busting DB's heads, then I got to weigh whether or not your presence, your production is on par with your presence and the angst that your presence is causing within the framework of the team. And so I think that's a decision that Washington has to make, is that do they have the infrastructure to push him out as their franchise guy and then start moving other guys who, again, may not be on team RG3. Because I guarantee there's a team not RG3 and a team RG3. And I don't know which team has the most soldiers on it right now, but that's an inventory that the coaches and the team are going to have to take into account when they're thinking about who's their next guy. And do you just start over with somebody with a clean slate and go from there? I think RG3 can be a good quarterback in the NFL. I just don't think, given everything that's transpired in Washington, it's going to happen in Washington. You know, it's like that relationship where it's not you, it's me. And I think you'd be great with somebody else, and I think I'll be great with somebody else. But right now, we've done too much damage to each other to stay together. You know what I mean? And that's where I think they're at.
And the worst thing you can get in a locker room, we've all been in locker rooms, is when you feel like a cat's too Hollywood. You could be Hollywood
yeah.
if you produce, but if a cat is too Hollywood in there, that's a cat that annoy real cats in that locker room. They just annoy.
Willie Beeman.
Huh?
Yeah, Willie Beeman. Yep.
Yeah, he, yep. That's it. He's too Hollywood in there, and I think that's part of his issue. And you, what set me off is the way he treated Donovan. Right? See, that's the piece. You know, when a cat's trying to reach out to you, and you slapping his hand like, you know.
What happened there?
You, so Donovan tried to reach out and talk to him, man, and I don't know if y'all remember that. And, you know, he basically, like, you know, rejected, like, I ain't got time to really talk to you. Like, I don't want you contaminating who I am. Right?
What happened?
When he first got there. And so when he first arrived, Donovan offered to reach out to him and, you know, give him some feedback. Because if anybody would know, it's Donovan. Right?
Because Donovan had just been there with Shanahan, right?
Yeah, I see
the connections.
And,
I'm like, why does McNabb even care? But he had just been in there under Shanahan. It was kind of like trying to hip him to it. You know, if the cat that just got fired, you know, trying to show up at the office and be like, hey, let me tell you about this dude.
And really trying to, you know, get him to, you know.
Get that security.
It's also about a fraternity of black quarterbacks. And so there's another dynamic here that I don't think anybody's talking about, because I think he's been in relationships similar to Russell Wilson, and there's a dynamic of you notice the interaction that he's having in the locker room with his receivers. Like, it's a who's the pushback coming from? Come from Deshaun, and so there's some relationship pieces there that he don't interact. Like, so he going up to the suite, he doing some other things, and sometimes I think there's a subtext about are you a real G in this locker room? Are you somebody who is down, or are you real corporate? Right? And I think there's a framing of him, and the way he reacts to it is different than how Russell reacted to it. Russell just embedded him more into the guys and really did not he deflected it in different ways, whereas RG3 like stepped up, like, you know, I'm in the suite with Snyder, so, you know, you step. Because no matter who you bring together, I got the key guy who writes the checks. But that does not win locker rooms. Like, because you buddy buddy.
So it sounds like you're saying he's more Steven from Django. Samuel Jackson's character.
Yeah. And you can tell from
the way. Come on now, fellas. We can't go there.
I ain't trying to go there. What,
clean that up, Marcus. Come on now.
I'm just trying to interpret. I'm just trying to interpret what D. Wills is saying. And he said what he's trying to say. He could have said, no, I don't mean that.
But there's been a subtext on him. And this is something we don't even talk about in terms of when he first got there. Like, when Cash said cold words like he think he's too good for everybody, that's cold for a whole bunch of other stuff. And I think that's always been an issue when he got there. And I don't know if he breaks bread. You know, an important part of being a quarterback, and this is what Cutler's problem is. Like, you can be aloof when you're a left tackle. You can be aloof as a nose guard. You can be aloof as a wide receiver because they think you're crazy anyway. But you can't be aloof as a quarterback. You got to be that cat that breaks bread. What makes Brady, when you talk to people about why is Brady so good, it's the stuff that happens during the week he does. Not just in practice, but the things when you hear about what he does just as a regular guy in the locker room. You know, interacting with people and putting jokes. Same thing with Peyton Manning, they say. You know, they say he's like the biggest jokester in terms of just, you know, doing all the crazy stuff and doing something in your locker or whatever. He engages in ways that make him part of the locker room. And I don't see that happening with RG3. I think RG3 is like, this stuff is corporate. You know, I come in, do my thing, but I'm hanging in the suite with Snyder. And he doesn't see that he has to have this role as being organic. He got to be the guy that, you know, that does some different things. And that's a perception that's there that seems to be playing out.
Right. And I like where you're going with that, D. Because it's a certain kind of a dynamic you have to have when you're in a leadership position. Like, you have to be able to, and from a sports perspective, you know, from a basketball perspective, you know, if I'm the senior captain of the team, I still got to be able to connect and show the other guys that I'm cool and I can connect with the freshman 11th man. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not too elevated in my position that I can't remember what it was like to grind and fight for a roster spot. Or, you know, I got to make that connection with that guy, that walk-on. You know, I may be the star quarterback, but when the other guys see me do that, that brings them closer to me. You know what I mean? And that allows me to bring the locker room together, because I'm pulling in a guy who most people don't respect for his athletic ability, but they're going to respect him because I respect him. You know, and if I'm showing him respect, then he's got a place on the squad. And the other guy, and I think those are the things that leaders do. And guys like Brady, you know, if you're in a business or a corporate setting, that's like being cool with the guy in the mailroom, you know, or being, you know, in with the night staff, with the janitorial night staff, you know, and knowing them by a first name, you know, asking them about their family, asking them about their kids, even though, you know, they're cleaning your office. You know, that is the type of leadership that people buy into, because they see, you see that everybody is valuable, you know, and I don't know if necessarily you get that vibe from RG3. I don't know the kid personally, but it seems like he doesn't come across as the kind of guy that sees that and understands that dynamic within leadership, is that you have to make sure that everybody understands that they have value. And I don't know if you necessarily invest in that. And when you don't invest in that, it's hard to get people to follow.
And I think lastly, I'll say this, is that when you said that thing about Shanahan, and, you know, we got to invoke, you know, some of our scholarship that we do, you know, Phil and Mark, we are also educators and we love. So Carol Dweck, who's a great researcher out at Stanford, has this thing called growth mindset. And so when you describe, so there's this growth and fixed mindset. Now, these are not traits, but these are ways of being. And one of the things when you describe what he was doing in terms of not wanting to watch film and do it, you know, very, very successful people. And it just happens to a lot of successful students who come in who are 4.0 students in high school. And then they come to college and they experience adversity, that very successful people have this real clear thing about you. When you're a great athlete like that, it's like you're either good at it or you're not. And so you don't see this opportunity for growth in a way that is about this ongoing, continuing kind of learning piece. And so when you said he didn't really want to break down film, because his eliteness, he's always been elite. And so now he has to really break himself down. And for some people, that's uncomfortable, versus someone like a Brady, who started from a place where he had to have this growth mindset, this ongoing growth. Or, you know, you have some elite athletes who have a growth mindset like a Peyton Manning, who's always learning, like he's continuing. And I think that's a piece he has. You can change that. And hopefully Gruden can help break him down in a way that gets him to appreciate that's just part of the process to greatness. But a lot of great folks, whether it's in academics or athletics, struggle with that. Them from growing. You know, that's, I think, what made Michael Jordan so great, is that he not only was great, but he had a growth mindset. But part of that came from his failure at a time where a lot of folks didn't fail in high school, get cut, all this stuff. So he's always fighting for something. But when you're someone like RG3, where you've just been the best at every level, where you've just been that person, that you just outdo it, got the Heisman, do all that stuff, when you run into that kind of the adversity he ran into, people with growth mindset just see that as part of the process. People with a fixed mindset see it as a major barrier that they're not sure they can overcome. And I think that's something that he's going to have to figure out how he can deal with it.
Wow, winning.
And then it becomes everyone else's. It becomes an issue of others, you know. Well, I'm not performing, not because I'm not capable of performing. I know I'm good at this, but I'm not performing because the other guys around me aren't doing what they're supposed to do.
Yes.
You know, and that's where
Yes. Teachers aren't teaching the material the right way. You know, it becomes a very external locus of control.
It's the coach's fault, you know. You hear kids like that. You know, that's the kind of kid that has that fixed mindset. You know, and I talk about this with my players quite often, because I think it's a really revolutionary concept when you apply it to sports. But it's that kid who, you know, I'm not playing because of the coach. You know, I'm not playing because, you know, so-and-so is not passing me the ball, or, you know, it's just something else. It's always something else with that kind of a kid. And it seems like RG3 is kind of beginning to express that and throw that out there. And he's got to let that go. You know, he's got to let go of that process. And he's got to get focused And, you know, when you go through the you know, recent history of quarterbacks who have come in with top billing and haven't quite fanned out, you see that fixed mindset, you know. Even a guy like Mike Vick, you know, it took Mike Vick a while to start to realize that I got to work at this, you know, and I have to have a process. And I think when you talk about growth mindset, that's what it's about. It's simply about having a process in which you break down a challenge. And if you don't have a process for breaking down challenges, then you become stagnant. You become stagnant and you get stuck and then you start to avoid challenges. And so then you just look for the easiest path and you take that and you run on it. And you don't max out your potential because you're not comfortable with your own personal process for tackling challenges. So we had to take it there for a second. You're listening to The Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG Renegade Radio, brought to you by Resistance Digital Solutions. Oh, man, that was a great conversation, fellas. That was a great conversation. Let's pay some bills real quick and get into the dog of the week. So let me go ahead and get the sound queued up real quick. Now we're going to get into our Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. Resistance Digital Solutions. Are you tired of running to the boys in blue? Are you done with listening to sales staff trying to upsell you technology that you don't need? We've all been there. So what did the Real Sports Guys do? We contacted Resistance Digital Solutions for all our technology needs. They are not there to meet sales quotas or make profit margins. They simply just want to sell you what you need at a fair price. From iPads to PCs to flat screens, TVs, or intricate home theater systems, they customize every solution based on your needs. Check out their website at www.resistancedigital.com or email them at sales@resistancedigital.com for your custom technology solutions today. Fellas, dog of the week. Brought to you by Resistance Digital. Shout out to our man LR. He keeps the lights on as a bad boy. Helps us keep the podcast rolling for you all out there. So shout out to him. Make sure you hit him up at Resistance Digital to get all your technology needs met at a very reasonable price with great convenient service. I'm gonna start with my man D Wheels. You know how it goes.
We need more dogs.
Well, this is easy. I'm staying close to home. MG3, Melvin Gordon III, boy. Set a FBS single game rushing record, 408 yards against Nebraska, against the Black Shirts in only three quarters. That's beast mode. Beast mode. Do your thing, boy. Do your thing. Oh, my goodness. He dancing. I love it. Melvin Gordon. That's my dog.
Yeah, that was ridiculous. Yeah, he killed that. I'm going to just go ahead and give mine. That's my dog of the week as well. In three quarters, 409 yards. That is some NCAA football, you know, easiest level kind of statistical day. You know, that's Bo Jackson, Tecmo Super Bowl, excellent condition kind of day. You know what I mean? That's some unstoppable, you know, you can't touch me. Christian Okoye zigzagging down the field, Nigerian nightmare type stuff. I mean, just ridiculous. There were times where Nebraska, it was like Melvin Gordon had on, like, a cloak, a cloaking device. If you ever played Halo, it was like he was cloaked. And they could not see him. It was like, did you touch him? Did you at least beat him? You know what I'm saying?
With another great back on the field, with another Heisman Trophy back on the field, his boy.
Yeah.
So he's like.
And,
you know, he looked
and I'm
like
sure
Mike,
Abdullah,
Mike, like
I'm
Mike
sure
Mike
Abdullah
right
was like, really? I'm sure Abdullah felt betrayed like a mug. Like, y'all just going to let him keep running, huh? Y'all just going to let him keep running. Like, we ain't in competition.
Look at that dance he doing on the sideline. Quit dancing.
Right. Y'all just going to sit there and watch him do it, huh? Yeah. You know. Abdullah on the sidelines. He on the sidelines on that P. Diddy. It's all messed up now. What am I going to do now, huh? What am I going to do now?
It's all messed up now.
It's all messed up now. What am I going to do now, huh? I mean, how could you watch that, man? Your direct competition is just lighting your defense up. And he's just like, come on, fellas. Come on. Come on.
Watching watching your Heisman just slip out that back door. You just like, there goes,
you know what I'm saying?
Walking
the dope walker,
the
Heisman, you watching all that just go down the drain. Because of your own defense. Because of your own defense.
Was going to have a heart attack. I mean, I thought he's going
to. I feel bad for
Bo
Pelini, man. He's a jerk and everything, but nobody deserves that.
I thought he was going to pass out. I said, I don't know if he's ready for this. You know, he might throw Willie Mays over here and kick him on the way past.
Hey, somebody get him down.
I'd have put a Mike Tomlin on him, like I'm calling a play and running on the field. Oops. I ran into him.
Seriously,
somebody got to make a tackle.
He might as well. He would have been, and he, you know what? When he would have done that, he'd have been the first guy in Nebraska colors to touch you. Man, it was quite the day, man. And I watched that game, and there were seriously times where I was like, can they not see him? Like, they didn't, like, they don't see him running past them right now. They tackling someone, like, thinking somebody else got the ball.
Yeah.
It was crazy. It was
crazy. I missed the game.
It was fantastic to watch.
I missed the game. I was headed to the Cavs game, and we had gotten to the restaurant about, I don't know, 6:30, and, you know, the Alabama game is on, but the Badger game is on too, and they show us stats. It's like the third quarter, beginning of the third quarter. My man's already got 300 and some yards, and he's averaging like 16 yards a carry. You know, I thought maybe it was some kind of statistic they were showing, you know, his career against Nebraska or, you know.
Right. Runs outside the tackle, runs on a specific kind of a play.
Right, for a season. Yeah, I was.
Right.
And then they showed a graphic that he was only X yards away from LaDainian Tomlinson's record for a single game. I was like, what? That was crazy.
Exactly. Yeah, man, it was quite, like, I was literally like, again, like, yeah, it was ridiculous. It was one of the best performances I've seen. Again, it was Tecmo Bowl, Bo Jackson, excellent condition, and they just couldn't do nothing with him. They just couldn't do nothing with him. It was ridiculous. It was ridiculous. So, yeah, PhD, you gonna weigh in.
We need more dogs.
Sorry, D. Wills. My dog of the week is the Ohio State Buckeyes. 2 weeks ago, they went into East Lansing and beat a very good Michigan State team. I guess at this point, I'm becoming more of a Big Ten fan because I want the Big Ten to have a place at the table in this playoff. So Ohio State is my dog of the week.
Mm-hmm.
The question, do you think they get it done? Do you think anybody in the Big Ten can get it done? Right now, Wisconsin and Ohio State seem to be on a collision course unless somebody slips up over the next couple of weeks to play in the Big Ten championship. Do you think that's going to be a big enough win for Ohio State or Wisconsin, whoever wins that game, to vault into the conversation?
I mean, Ohio State's sitting right outside. I think they have a good chance of making that fourth spot. This is my opinion.
Okay.
I agree. I think Ohio State has an opportunity to – a strong opportunity. I think they will make the top four by the end of the season. I think it's one of those things where they lost that Virginia Tech game. You know, it was either their first or second game of the season. And – I believe that the committee will take into account Braxton Miller's injury and the development of JT Barrett's development over the course of this season. We've even seen that some of these SEC teams, I think, are set up to have at least two losses. So I think it's going to be really, really tough to put a two-loss team in to the Final Four leaving out one of these one-win teams, such as a Florida State if they were to lose, or an Oregon, or an Ohio State.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how all that plays out. And we're going to keep monitoring that as it goes on. And we'll check in with you all and talk a little bit more about that. I do want to kind of get into the NBA, though, tonight. And we're kind of running on time. So I do want to talk NBA. Because the season is kind of rolling, and that's one of our wheelhouse subjects. We cover the NBA in a very, very unique way here on this show. It's true barbershop talk when it comes to the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, as we like to call it around these parts. So we had a little assignment, come up with our top five players in the league currently. I'll let PhD go ahead and start. You give your list. Obviously, we'll have our opinions on your list, and we'll get into your list, and then we'll have D-Wheels go and give his list and so forth and so on. So let's go ahead and engage in this little activity, fellas. PhD, your top five.
I'm going to speed through for the interest of time. Anthony Davis was knocking in my top five. I have him as number six right now. Number five, Chris Paul. Number four, Steph Curry. Number three, James Harden. That was one that I really had to take a step back and think about it objectively and see what he's been doing last year and this year on his own outside of Oklahoma City. I have James Harden number three, Kevin Durant at two, LeBron James at one. Again, LeBron James at one, Durant at two, Harden at three, Steph Curry at four, and Chris Paul at five.
Okay. The surprise for me is Harden at three. I'm a Harden guy. Justin Page will tell you this. Harden at three. But you know what? When you're going 24 points a game, you're going six and a half boards, seven assists. It's hard to argue, you know. And he's doing all of that, shooting 37% from the field right now. So I mean, the guy still has some uptick, you know, to put into his game. So I like that. I like that. I'm not mad at that list, man. Steph Curry, wow. You know, that guy has he's become everything people thought he would be and more. D-Wills, give me your top five.
My top five, and I'll start from the top, come down. LeBron at one, Kevin Durant at two. I have Anthony Davis at three. And I still have Carmelo at four. And then I have somebody that's interesting that's not on anybody's list is Marc Gasol at five.
Wow. Explain Gasol. Talk to me about that.
I think Marc Gasol has probably been the most underrated, being in Memphis, superstar. And part of it is, other than and Carmelo does it, he's done it at both ends. Right now they got the best record in the league. This guy right now is at 17 points, 7 rebounds, you know, almost 2 blocks. But what he commands on the defense and offensive end is, I mean, if you think about where this guy started, what his people come in worried about him every time they come to the game. You know, they worry about what they're going to do with Gasol. And then on top of it, his ability to pass as a big man. I just think this guy is a bear. And as a free agent, folks are going to be coming after him. I just don't think he gets the kind of respect. I think he is elite in ways. If he was in other markets, people would be clamoring. I think some of that European stuff, but he is, to me, a flat-out star in ways that sometimes Kevin Love gets stuff, but this guy's carried his team through the playoffs. I mean, he's had some other players, but he is the heartbeat, and people don't like playing him. None of these great big men, none of these power forwards, none of these folks, he gives them the business, and they all would say it. LeBron would say it. Kevin would say it. Anthony Davis would say it. Melo would say it. This is the kind of guy, when you say his name, they all look and say, he give you the business. Howard don't want to guard him. He gives people the business on both ends.
Okay. Okay. All right. I like the Gasol edition. That's thinking outside of the box. That's how we do here. I like that. I like the Gasol edition. I'll give you my five real quick. At number one, I got LeBron. Number two, KD. Number three, I have Anthony Davis. And, you know, I'm sorry, Anthony, I was wrong. Number four, I got Steph Curry. Number five, Chris Paul. I have to say that now. Like, that's a part of his name when I say it. I was totally wrong on that kid, man. Dude is something else. I mean, he's something else. He's something we haven't seen since Akeem, man. I mean, young KG maybe. But dude is just ridiculous.
I saw him play, man, and live, in person. Man, I think it was last Monday, if I'm doing my math right, against the Cavs. And his line was something to the effect, I don't know if you guys can look it up, but something to the effect of 27, 28 points, 13, 14 rebounds, a couple of steals, and he only had
Yeah, I got it here. He had he shot 57% from the field, 75% from the free throw line, 27 points, 14 rebounds, four steals, and three blocks, and a partridge in a pear tree.
He's had three games with 25 or more, 10 or more rebounds, five or more blocks. That's a large amount of numbers, man. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, man.
I would. Chris Paul is interesting because he might be losing some street credibility. His team is loaded, and I don't see that Zeke. And Game Changer, you got me on the Chris Paul thing. I had to get the NBA. I got NBA TV because you talked to me about Chris Paul. I'm like, I got to study this guy.
Yeah.
Now, let me get an understanding. And I am – the stuff that's going on with them disappoints me because I think he should be key in making sure that team is ready. And there's something there. And he gets passes in ways that other cats don't get passes for stuff like that. So that's why I'm like I did Darren Williams, I'm starting to get that. So I look at Chris Paul with that side look right now. I think Steph's game need to develop a little bit more in some other phases before I move him up in this stuff. But that's my only criticism of Steph. I love Steph. He can shoot. He's been better at defending. He's been passing.
Shooting ain't even what he does, man. Shooting is not what he does. He drops the ball into the cylinder. Dude is just so precise, man. He doesn't shoot the ball. He mentally drops it into the cylinder with his mind. Like, dude's shot is just not even something that you can't even call it a shot. Regular people shoot the basketball. He does something totally different.
And I always feel like because you watched what he did to Michael, who was one of the best defenders in college basketball, that he always has a special place in your heart.
Yeah. I mean, it's when you watch a guy up close, man. It's when you watch a guy up close and you watch a loved one just try and do something with him, and you're like, we're family of defensive stoppers. That's what we do. And so we share secrets, we give each other tips. And I'm like, man, I don't know what to tell him right now. I'm like, I got no sort of advice.
You should yell out Malice in the Palace. Malice in the Palace.
Yeah, that's my next step. Is like, did you bring a shank? You can shank him? Can you shank him? I mean, does anybody have a pen you could just kind of, sharpen on the sideline during halftime and take it out there and take him out? The kid's jump shot is just a thing of beauty. And what's really evolved with his game, though, is he has developed a yo-yo handle that when you have to guard a guy's jump shot and a guy can handle that well, you might as well play on roller skates or in house shoes, either one, or socks. Either of those three is what I would imagine it'd be like guard Steph Curry. Socks with Vaseline on them, you know what I'm saying? Like, you just can't get your foot. You just got no chance, man. You can't get your foot. You just sliding and skating all over the place, man. Yeah. It's a new guys breaking into the top five. Melo was an interesting one. Tell me about it. What's your read on Melo, man?
This is my thing. I'm not a prisoner of the moment in some senses. Is that I think
– his team is 3-10 right now.
I understand that. but he still does work at elite level. There's some things I don't like about his game, but he's still feared by every time that people come in the gym on him at night. He's putting up those numbers. There's some things he's got to do. But I still think when folks say, when they start putting their list down, cats in the league, like who does work on you, he's still on that list. They might be 3-10, but every one of these cats be like, man, he's 3-10, but I just don't want him to go to work on us. And so I think he still has that. And I could easily pull him off, and I don't know why I haven't, but I just feel like his body of work still puts him there. But I would say by next year, If he don't write the ship now, he'll be pulling out of there. But I still, when you talk about, you know, when the conversation happens about free agencies, about LeBron, Melo, and I mean LeBron and Melo, you know, that's how they talk about it. And you got to think about this guy. He's had some tough years, but most of his teams made the playoffs. And people talk about and pushed through the playoffs, and he did it on some Denver teams against some great other teams, and we still give Kevin Love, and he never really done anything in the playoffs. Melo's been on, as if you were to put it, very few losing teams since he's been in the league. You know, very few. And so, you know, has he been able to get on top yet? I mean, he's been unfortunate. He had to go up against the Lakers, just like Chris Webber had to. You know, he had to go up against, you know, when the Lakers had their run, but and his San Antonio had a run. But his teams have always been the playoffs. His teams have always carried. He's always carried his team to the playoffs. And he's had some losing years here recently. But if you look across his timeline, his teams have always been competitive. Have they got over the top? And there's some things you can say about defense, yeah. But compared to some of these other cats, his teams have always been in the playoffs and in the run.
Okay. Well, that's a reasonable defense for Carmelo. I'm going to leave it there. I'm going to leave it at that. I'm going to let you have your moment. You listen to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com. We are about to go into the XL Academics last word. XL Academics, changing one mind at a time. D. Will, this is your co-edit this week. What do you got for us in the last word?
Well, you know, I want to end where we started. It is interesting the way the Goodell brand has shifted. It is almost like he went into the witness protection program. He's been administering from somewhere in Alaska. And he's slowly rechanging his brand. I mean, one of these parties, whether the Democrats or the Republicans, might have had this cat run for office. Because nobody can switch and dip like the habitual line stuff. I'm amazed by it, that he can reframe and re-hit. And we've all forgotten all the missteps he's made. And now this stuff is all about AP. And it's masterful because people in power and money, they know the public stamina for staying on top of stuff isn't there. They just know they gotta ride you out. And because of the kind of money he brings to the NFL, the owners are like, just keep riding. Keep riding. Keep riding. We're gonna get to the clear. If we put up enough smoke and mirrors, they can forget you messed up. They're gonna forget that you said you didn't have the tape, yet the tape showed up. They're gonna forget that you said that Ray Rice didn't say it, but when Ray Rice said, I told you everything, they're going to forget all of that. They're going to forget your whole stance on integrity and everything else, but yet you do something else. They forget all of that because we can manage people. We got enough money to manage public, and he has just done it for behind the scenes. Think about it. Rusty came out talking about AP on Mikey in the Morning this morning. And who came out? Roger had one of his men come out and counter. But he still in the background has not been in front of a mic, I don't think. And so I'm just amazed by this. And the players, if they are going to get an upper hand, their motivation cannot be money. Their motivation has to be about power and control. And power and control may not have anything to do with you getting more money for mid-level people or your superstars. It may mean you're putting the emphasis on the core way things are done in terms of running businesses, running the business of football. That's where they got to shift their focus. Because if they don't, Roger's going to keep doing what he's doing. And what he's doing is what Ali taught people a long time ago, is the rope-a-dope. And he gives us the modern-day rope-a-dope. And the rest of us, we like George Foreman. He just waits for us to get tired. And then he going to knock us out. RSG.
Yeah, that does it. I mean, what?
Yeah.
I mean, wow. We can't, where can we go
talk
from here?
Baby, baby.
Hey, he dropped the mic and walked off.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
D-Wiz kicked a hole in the speaker, then jetted. That does it for this edition of the Real Sports Guys. RealSportsGuys.com, RSG, Renegade Radio. Till next time, check us out. Hit down the podcast, and we'll catch you. The Real Sports Guys brought to you by Resistance Digital Solution on the Rocks, Rockford, Illinois, XL Academics, and Fredericks County. Peace.